It's always been fascinating to me how things can be simultaneously true and false, how people can be good and bad all in one, how someone can love you in a way that is beautifully selfless while serving themselves ruthlessly.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are your best place for real reviews on TikTok, Instagram, Goodreads, most popular books, and whether or not you should read them or skip them. I just decided we're the best place for that. So welcome, welcome to our book club. We have a very special guest today, our number one fan, person to like all of our posts, to comment on everything. I'm gonna let Casey finish the introduction.
Everyone, someone I have mentioned many times, if you listen to any of our other episodes, it's the woman who introduced me to reading, my mother, Fiona Murray.
Woo!
Yay!
Hello, everyone. I'm super excited to be here. I'm nervous too.
We're gonna have our number one fan. Well, and along with our special guest, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And so for this week's episode, we are tackling a very interesting book that Casey brought to our attention and made us read. It is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Now, if you don't know about this book, it's been going around Book Talk, and Taylor Jenkins Reid in general has been going around Book Talk. She has a ton of books that have been super popular, and you'll find out why throughout this episode. But basically, it's about this up-and-coming reporter in New York gets the break of a lifetime when a Hollywood starlet from the 1940s through the 1900s wants her to interview her for a book that she will write about her life, the true story of Evelyn Hugo's life. And you go through these twists and turns as the parts unfold of each of her husbands. So she has seven husbands over the course of her life, and you find out her real true love in her life. And that's kind of where we leave off in the no spoiler section, because I'm not going to say anything else there.
Perfect. And I do want to add, my mom actually begged me to read this book for years before I finally read it. So the podcast has Fiona Murray to thank also for this.
Thanks, Casey. Who knew I was such a trendsetter?
So first things first, as usual, we each went to the internet and found a review we either thought was funny, we thought related to what we felt about the book, or whatever we're feeling for the day. So who wants to start?
I can start. I have one that's like just kind of short. It is a 5-star review off of Google, and it is by People Call Me Cam. And they said, "I write this with a hollow chest and swollen eyes. Brilliant. My first heartbreak. A book I will come back to every day for what I'm sure the rest of my life."
Wow.
That's high praise.
Yeah. I just loved hollow chest, my first heartbreak.
I will say, the reviewers do be dramatic, because I have two reviews that are very dramatic as well that I think coincide with yours really well. So okay, both of mine are from Goodreads, and they're 5 stars. So the first one is, "Not to be dramatic," always a great start to a review. "But if there ever comes a point in time where the fate of the human civilization is coming to an end and we need to create a time capsule to immortalize our posterity, this book better be in it. There has never been a more honest and enthralling book in the history of the world, ever." And then the second review is just like 6 words, and it's from Joel, and he says, "How do I cope?" All in caps. That's the review.
I love that. Those are,
I love that
dramatic
one. Yeah. They are.
I feel like mine's not quite as dramatic, but it's also a 5-star review. It's from Storygraph, from the user me with lots of E's. "Still heartbroken by the fact that I can't watch Little Women starring Evelyn Hugo and Celia St. James. This book was amazing. No need to say more."
Mic drop.
Period. That is a mic drop. I have a couple, but one's kind of long, but this one is from Perry, and it's a 1-star review. And it says, as Abe Lincoln observed, for those who like this kind of book, it is just about the kind of book they would like. I'm like, oh, okay. Tell us how you really feel. Then it goes on to talk about specific paragraphs that make this person cringe. I'm like, oh, alrighty. So, thought that was succinct and invoking Abe Lincoln.
Yes. Well, I guess we're about to find out if we are all the type of person who likes this type of book.
That's right.
It's well, both a quote that says something but nothing at the same time.
Exactly. It was like, okay.
I had to stop and think about it.
Yeah. Well, why was your quote for a 1-star, Perry? I mean, that could apply to any book.
Yes. It's not really an opinion. It's more like.
No. Well, then he goes on. I repeatedly winced and rolled my eyes at soppy, silly prose, implausible as. In a quote. And it's filled with emojis as well.
So this person is both Gen Z and pretentious?
Yes, I think so. I think that's accurate.
Very interesting. Well, the overall reviews of this book are very good, which if you've heard anything about it, will probably not surprise you. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.5 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.6 out of 5. Do you guys feel like that matches up with your opinion?
Yep.
That tracks. That's the closest we've seen the Amazon and the Goodreads be together, I think.
I think you're right.
I think so. Which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, I brought this book to the podcast, so obviously I loved it. And my mom begged me to read it, so obviously she loved it.
Well, and I just finished reading it the second time so that I could talk intelligently about this book. And I liked it as much the second time as I did the first time, even though I knew what was going to happen. So it holds up is what I'm trying to say.
Well, because I think the plot twist is not like too dramatic to where like if it was spoiled, you could still read it and like
right
still.
Right. And she does a really good job of concealing that until pretty close to the end. And so even though you're reading away, you're getting caught up in all of this story and getting caught up in it. And then all of a sudden it's like, bang, you're like, oh, I see. I wasn't expecting that.
My sister knew we had this on our list, but it was on her list to read. And she doesn't read a whole lot because she is a very busy girl. She's a teacher. Mm-hmm. You know about that. But
my mom's an English teacher, for those who don't know.
But she read this a month or so ago and was like, you have to read it right now, and gave me her copy of the book. So high praise from Anna Brown.
Yeah.
Nice.
Would you say, we're going to jump into the non-spoilers so we can get to the fun stuff. Would you say this book is more plot or character driven?
Yeah, we're going to ask that question.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Casey.
Weigh in? Oh, you don't want to weigh in first, Miss English teacher?
We don't talk about plot and character-driven novels in sixth grade. I think it's kind of a mixture of both. Because without the stories that kind of bring it through, maybe more character driven, slightly heavier on the character.
I'd say more character driven just because I feel like Evelyn's choices actually create the plot most of the time instead of the other way around. I think there's a few instances where that's not true, but I think I agree overall. I'd say character driven.
I think I'm in the same boat just because, I mean, the whole point of the story is Evelyn Hugo's life, so it makes sense to be driven by how Evelyn Hugo develops what she turns out to be. Not sure she changes a whole lot through the book, but
no, I think she stays pretty constant.
Yeah,
yeah, I would agree. I think it's more character driven, but there is a subplot to it, so it's not just all character. But yeah, it's all done. The whole book is basically a choice from Evelyn Hugo.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, has anyone on the podcast read any of the other books by this author, who, as Caitlin mentioned before, is extremely popular?
That was Catherine, but yes, I have read Malibu Rise. Oh.
Sorry.
That's okay. I read Malibu Rising earlier this year, I think. And I like am very on Malibu Rising. I think I liked this one like a lot more as far as Taylor Jenkins Reid goes.
Yeah. I've also read Malibu Rising and I actually liked that book, but this one's better. But what I absolutely love, and it comes from my Sarah J. Maas heart, the world building and the universe building, all of her books are in the same universe and characters from each book show up in the different books.
Oh. And that's,
I love it.
Yeah.
That's pretty, I didn't know that. I have not read any of other Taylor Jenkins Reid's, in part because I didn't realize she wrote this. I don't know why I didn't clue in. I'm not. Once I find an author, I do tend to go through several of their books, but I didn't clue in that this, so it shows you how oblivious I can be. Well, I did not realize that she wrote it until I was looking at the title.
So the Malibu Rising follows her third husband, Evelyn's third husband's children.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's a different character. I mean, he's not the main character. No, it's
right,
the children
okay.
that he had in his first wife.
Okay.
Right. Arguably the least likable of all of the husbands.
Yeah.
But and does Celia show up at a party or something?
Yes, she does.
Yes, she does.
That's right.
Yes. Oh, cool. Cool, cool.
But yes, I have also read Malibu Rising and agree a little bit more with Catherine. I liked it, but this one is definitely the stronger book out of the two.
Yes. I will say I read one review that was a 2-star review. They didn't finish the book and they were mad because they picked up this book thinking it was a book. I had to look it up. There is a book called The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Yes.
Different author, different book, but apparently people get them mixed up.
That's been making its rounds on TikTok lately.
Mm.
I've seen that spoken about a couple of different times.
Yes. Well,
I have not read it.
Despite the fact.
The review I see of it mentions Agatha Christie, so maybe Casey needs
to. Okay. Oh. I'll say, too, despite the fact that Fiona Murray is, you know, of an older generation and is talking with a millennial and two Gen Zers, she is the book talk queen and knows about every single thing that occurs on book talk.
I do have a special place in my heart for book talk.
Okay, well, what about the pacing of the book? I know probably my only complaint in the novel is that sometimes when the story broke out to present day, I didn't love like the interludes with I just forgot her name, but the journalist
Monique.
Yeah. Some of those I didn't love, but overall I thought the pacing was good.
I do think those chopped up the book a little bit. I thought the pacing was fine. I was trying to squeeze this book in and I thought it was kind of longer than it needed to be. And that would be my one complaint about the book, is sometimes there was just way too much detail that I didn't care about and didn't add a ton. Like, overall, very good book. It could have been a little shorter in my opinion, because it's a pretty thick thing to read quickly despite it being an easier read.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I kind of felt like sometimes the Evelyn's story ended and kind of, and then abruptly you were thrown into Monique's point of view. I was like, sometimes it would take me a minute to kind of go, oh, wait, we're in present day. And I'd be like, wait, what's going on here? And so that was a little bit choppy. I felt like the pacing overall was really good, because even reading it on the second time, I didn't feel rushed. Or that it was sloppy. I didn't pick up a lot of the things that I that you get on a second read where you're like, oh, skip over this part, and then start reading again, which I have done that on some other books that I'm just like, okay, I can skip this part. And I didn't do that on this one.
Right. I do think the book does a really good job of like balancing drama and character development throughout the entire book. So there's not one part of the book that's really strong and one part that's really boring. It's very well balanced, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as far as pacing, like leading up to the end goes, this is the first book in a long time that we've read that I'm very satisfied with the ending. And it wasn't just like long, done. Okay, there's the end. You know, like I felt very satisfied by this ending for once.
Yeah. Yes. There was like the parts where I was okay with the past and present, like going back and forth, was towards the end when she was just like, you're going to hate me at the end. And I was like, why are we going to hate you? Like, what's going on? So I liked that flip because it could add that dialogue and add that suspense into the story to interrupt the husbands a bit, which I did. I appreciated that.
How long did it take you guys to read it? I think it was like a bit of a longer book. I think it probably took me 4 or 5 days, but
I think I read it in 3, and that was like reading nonstop over Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, I think I'm at 3 to 4, but I was interspersing reading.
Yeah, I read probably the first half of it in the 3-hour plane trip. So it probably took me 7 or 8 hours total to read it.
That's when you found someone to compete with you. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. I'm normally the fast one.
8 hours. It took her one work day.
Yeah, Catherine, you're freakishly fast.
Yeah.
I don't know now.
Mom's like, but I'm faster.
No, I don't think I'm faster. I don't watch TV most of the time. I come home from work, I read, I eat dinner, and I go back and read some more. So when you're reading consistently over the course of several hours, you get into a rhythm and it's just, you start to read faster.
All right. Well, would you guys watch a book or a movie about, or would you watch a TV show or a movie? Excuse me. My brain.
Hulu limited series, I think, would be really good.
Oh, yes.
Each husband, each episode.
Uh-huh. Except Ooh. We don't have Hulu, so, you know, HBO Prime or Prime would be, or Netflix would work better for me.
I do like that, like a 7-episode. Yeah.
Because she's a glamorous movie star, you would really need something more in-depth and big to absorb or to showcase the glamour of her life.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost prefer a movie, but maybe like a series of movies, kind of like they did Harry Potter.
Yeah, I would watch it as a movie, and I think it'd make a really good movie. I do love the idea, though, of doing 7 episodes and like every husband has an episode. Mm-hmm. But
well, she even like titles the episodes for you by breaking up
right
her 7 mm-hmm. like titles each husband.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh, I loved like the way she titled the men, because then it gave you like another little interesting tidbit to kind of how the relationship was gonna go.
Right, and
it
was just like, ooh, this one's gonna be good.
Right. It was like the perfect little teaser.
Yes. I loved what was goddamn something. Oh, goddamn Don Adler. That was a good one.
Yep. And then it was like the disappointing McRiva or the predictable McRiva or something like that.
Gullible, yeah. I think it was.
Right, there you go.
If you're a Malibu Rising person, you will enjoy the appearance of McRiva in this book and what he gets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The character is consistent, I'll say that.
He is exactly like he is in Malibu Rising.
Except this time he thinks he's in charge and he's not.
Yes.
It's great.
Okay, right. Well, I want to switch up our next question a little bit. Mm. instead of like which character is your favorite, I want to know which husband is your favorite.
Ooh, that's a good one. I'll have to think about this.
Oh, I can tell you which husband I think. I loved Harry Cameron.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
He just because he was such a good person and he was her friend before they got married and he just stayed consistent and he wanted a family. I just, you know, I loved him.
Mm-hmm. He was really the only likable one.
The others kind of served a purpose in her life. She needed this to happen. She needed that to happen. She needed a cover. She needed this or whatever.
It was the most equal relationship too.
Yes, yes, yes. There wasn't a power struggle in the fact that they wanted to boost a public image or cover up a rumor or, you know, whatever.
Well, at the beginning of their relationship was a cover up.
Yes, but long term, I don't think it was. It always was. Well, you're right.
It was a friendship, which is why we liked him. It's because they were a friendship before they were a relationship.
Right.
He's one of the only people that he's one of the only men in the novel who's not ultimately a disappointment.
Right.
Also that truly knows her.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's like him and John. The football player.
Oh.
Isn't that his name? I think.
Yes, it's John Braverman.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the football player.
Some very normal name.
Only redeemable men in the book.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But yeah, so it seems like there's a consensus there. Harry's the obvious winner.
Mm-hmm. Well, star ratings.
Ooh, I think it's pretty obvious. I know I'm a 5-star.
5 stars.
I think ultimately, the first time I read it, I gave it a 4.
Interesting. Yeah.
That was my one gripe, is like this could have been shorter. Like I felt like I had to really work to get to the parts I wanted to get to.
Right.
I can see that. Mom, did you have the same reasoning or?
No, I just felt like I do give a lot of 5 stars ultimately, but I didn't turn around and want to read it right away, which is kind of my cutoff, like, ooh, do I want to read this again? So I think that was probably it. And it was just a really good book. To me, when I look at Goodreads, if it has a lot of, if the 4 stars and the 5 stars are at least equal or greater, I'll read it. If the 4 stars and the 3 stars are more equal, then I won't. And to me, it kind of fell in that 4-star, almost 5-star range.
All right.
Well, I did see a lot of 4.5 stars in the Goodreads reviews where they're like, if we could give a 1/2 star.
That's probably more where I would be.
Right.
Yes.
But I agree. I can't give it all 5 stars. I don't know. Great book.
I'm with you, Caitlin.
Just couldn't get all the way there.
Right.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I guess that would be important for our busy girl rating is, you know, it does stretch on. I mean, it's a long book. She had 7 husbands and it follows her whole life. So you got to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fake autobiography.
I would still give it a 4 for busy girl, though. Like, even though it is long, I think it's worth the read, definitely. So, and it's not like a hard read. It's just got to work a little bit to get it going.
Right. It's not high literature. I mean, it's good, but it's a good literature, but it's not Jane Eyre or, you know, Great Expectations or something where you got to sit and dissect the language. There's not a lot of big words in this book.
Right. Yeah. And because it is broken up by husbands, it is kind of easy to pick up, put down.
That's what I was going to say, because I'm still going to give it a 5 for Busy Girl just because of the ease of picking it up and putting it down. Like, I never felt like I had to catch back up into the book. So even though I was super busy while reading this book and reading 4 other books at the same time, I still felt like I could finish it and finish it quickly.
I will probably like cop out and do a 4.5 for my busy girl rating, because I think it's such a good read and everyone should read it. But I do agree that it does take a little bit of a commitment. So
I will say, my mom read it in 2 days. I came home for Thanksgiving. She bought it, started it at like 7 o'clock at night. And then the next night by 7 o'clock, actually, so it was a day, a full 24 hours, she had finished it.
Now we know why Catherine reads so fast. It's a genetic trait.
My sister gave me the paperback version. I was like, oh, it's not that long. This was a book I opened it up and went, oh my God, that's the smallest font. I was like, where are my glasses? Oops.
All right, mom, what's your busy girl rating?
I'll give it a 4.5 because it is easy to read and it is relatively fast paced. It's just a lot of information.
It is a lot of information, but props to the book. There are a lot of characters and I was never confused about who anyone was.
Unlike some books we've reviewed.
Yes, absolutely.
It helps that it was chronological too. Like, yes. At least the husband's part was chronological. So that was helpful.
Very true.
Wasn't jumping around.
Right. The jumping around drives me crazy.
Us too.
That's all there is out there right now.
Yep.
This one does jump between times still, but way more tolerable.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the spoiler section.
Yay. The
I'm
best
so
part.
Excited. It is the best part. All right. So go read the book. It's worth a read. You've gotten our take. We all loved it. And then come back and hear the rest of our discussion.
Okay, y'all. So when you first started the book, I want to know, what reason did you think Evelyn chose Monique to write her novel? Because I did not expect the ending at all.
I know it was very specifically mentioned that Monique wrote that Right to Die piece. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, maybe she wrote this Right to Die piece and that's what she read, you know? So I had like pieces I needed to piece it together, but still did not piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was because that was so specifically mentioned in the beginning that she was proud of that work. I assumed it had something to do with her writing that piece. Therefore, I at least predicted that portion of the ending.
I think I went full Hollywood drama and really just thought she was her mother. I was like, she gave her up for adoption and hid the pregnancy. Because like she mentions that her father was somehow adjacent in the movie industry, and you find out later how closely tied they are. But I really thought for a second there that they were somehow related.
Wouldn't be surprised. That lady got around.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely did not have any great theories. I think I was wondering if like Evelyn was trying to make up for something that she had done, which ended up being true, but that's like a very not specific. Once I knew that Monique's dad worked in movies, I was like, okay, it has to tie into Monique's dad somehow, but I definitely was not anywhere close to anticipating what actually happened.
No, I was the same. And I was like you, Caitlin. I thought, well, maybe she was trying to help up a journalist that was not as popular or hadn't made a name for herself yet, but was clearly a good writer. And this was another way of her reaching out and helping out. And then when we got the information about the dad, I thought, oh, I was a little bit like Catherine going, okay, this is a love child. But then when Monique talked to her mother and her mother was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, well, maybe not. So she did some good misdirection, kind of leading you down the path and then going, oh, wait, nope, not that.
And you kind of forget about it until it's re-brought up like three quarters of the way through.
Right. Until she's like, you're going to hate me when I'm done. I was like, why? What?
I was like, no.
And leading into the next question, sort of, what were your first impressions of Evelyn and did they change? Because I kind of hated her at the beginning and still kind of hated her at the end, even though I really enjoyed the book.
Yeah,
Not like an authentic hate, like a love to hate kind of thing.
Exactly. I get what you mean. I know exactly that feeling. Because I did love her. Like, I had so much respect for her and so much respect for her ruthlessness. But, I mean, she's a very gray character. Like, she did a lot of stuff that wasn't really, like, the right move. Like, even in her relationships with Celia, like, she made a lot of choices that I didn't necessarily agree with. And so, I would say it changed, but just because my understanding of her grew more complicated, not because I ended up like feeling differently about her, if that makes sense.
I mean, I'm of the group of we support women's rights and we support women's wrongs. So I absolutely loved Evelyn throughout all of it. My opinion did not change. I knew she was problematic, but we stand a problematic queen. and so I just loved how dynamic she was. And it's so refreshing to see a woman in literature that is so multifaceted, is cutthroat and ruthless, but for reasons, and is getting ahead through a terrible patriarchal society and playing them like a fiddle because of that. And so I just really appreciated her ruthlessness, but it wasn't ruthlessness for no reason, which is why you could really love her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
Yes, I would too. At the beginning, when she first started talking to Monique, I thought, okay, this is someone who's used to getting her way, because there were things that Monique said that was like, oh, I need to rephrase that, or I apologize for that. But when they got into the story, I absolutely loved that she realized that her sexuality was a weapon and that she could use that to get what she wanted. Even though I'm sure there were times when it didn't work out exactly as she wanted, or she paid a price for that sexuality or using it in that way, but that she was completely unashamed of saying, this is what I got. I'm going to use it to the best of my ability, and I'm going to get what I want.
Right. I think something that I did love in the book, just kind of going off of that, has nothing to do with the question. But you can see as she gets older how she kind of like feels differently about the way that she had to use her sexuality, and she never mm-hmm. regretted it. But I think by the end of the book, you really get her reflections on how trapped she felt being a woman. And mm-hmm. I really appreciated that perspective.
I feel like she's like a Kardashian, like she's driving you nuts, but you still want to read about what's going on in her life because it's so wild, you know?
Yeah,
not quite. I liked her more than that, but but that's like the kind of vibe I felt for her, is like, you're despicable, but I love it.
But she was talented too, like, right? She's obviously a super talented actress. If she could convince her first husband that she loved him and then leave him for better, greener pastures, in her opinion,
right?
Like, she obviously had the talent.
So smart. I just loved how smart she was. Like, she was a great example of, like, creating your own luck.
The Mick Riva one.
Yeah, the Mick Riva one was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to talk about each of the husbands? So each husband, we've already said, has monikers like poor Ernie Diaz, her first husband, then goddamn Don Adler. So what did you think of these monikers, and what did you think that they summed up the chapters well? And what did you think of each of the husbands?
Each of the husbands, with the exception of the one we've mentioned, were horrible. I did really like the one, I always forget about him, and I forget his name. I forget all their names, but
Rex North, I think is what you're thinking.
Yes. Was he the
purely transactional?
Yes.
I think I enjoy, like, outside of like the wholesomeness of oh my gosh, I literally just forgot his name. Who's the good one?
Harry Cameron.
Harry, yes. Okay. Outside of the wholesomeness of Harry, I really enjoyed sort of the decency of Rex and how they had this mm-hmm. sort of like transactional but respectful relationship. because a lot of the other men are like very abusive of their power or like very misogynistic in the way that they view Evelyn. And he was someone who was just very practical and, you know, not a bad guy, but also not one who had an actual romantic connection with Evelyn. And so he was my favorite outside of Harry.
Mm-hmm. I think my issue with the pacing of the book comes to husband Max. That's the one I think that I'm like, this doesn't need to be in here. He's so boring. This is so predictable. It made her leave Harry. Like, I was just like, get on. I don't want to read about this one. I think that's the one that I probably disliked the most because it was just so dull compared to the others. And it was at the end.
But I could see where it needed to happen because her and Harry's relationship, it was purely platonic. She had lost Celia. He had lost John. He was an alcoholic. They were really just co-parenting at that point.
Right. I see
she
what
needed
was
that love and support.
It was just, but yeah, it was like for like 2 days though.
I know it's terrible.
I was like, this is so annoying.
A husband there that wasn't just a platonic relationship, I think, because right. She was missing that love.
That one, well, and maybe. You go, Mom.
I think it was interesting because it brought to the forefront that he was in love with the movie star and not the person. And this book reminded me a lot over and over and over of Elizabeth Taylor. And I know I'm really dating myself because you guys probably don't really know who she is, but she had more than seven husbands, married one guy multiple times. And I can't even remember his name, but it just made me think that probably some of these marriages that she had were the man wanted to marry the movie star. And when he woke up the next morning, he had just Elizabeth. And that's kind of what that set up in my mind, was that he was in love with the movie star. And when he felt like he had the movie star, he was all in. But when he realized he woke up the next day with just plain Evelyn, he was like, oh, this is not what I thought was going to be like.
I just feel like we kind of already got that with Don at the beginning.
Don was different though, because he was controlling. It wasn't that he expected Evelyn to be different. It was that he was an abuser.
And I also feel like he was a collector in the sense that like he just wanted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, also, that was a lot of them, is they liked being seen with her.
Right. Well, that was also a part of the movie studio system at the time, was that you married and dated who the studio thought would be good to promote a movie. And I kind of felt that the beginning of that relationship with Dawn, that's what that was about. This is going to look good in the papers. And they actually happened to fall in and have some real, if maybe surface level, feelings for each other. And it turned very bad.
Well, and I think Dawn was more popular than she was at the time. So it was a different kind of role reversal than Max, where she was using him to get ahead in the world. And he was very afraid of her rising star. And that's when he became controlling, is when she was doing better than him.
That's why I think Max broke my heart maybe the most out of all of them, is because he already knew her and had worked with her. And so I felt like their connection was genuine. And, you know, she was already a powerful actress. And so, you know, I felt like, oh, maybe here's someone who like really appreciates her for like the powerful woman she is. And it did not go that way. And so I was like very heartbroken by that. But I also do see, Kaylin, what you're saying is like there was just not a lot of drama. Like that one took a nosedive pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't hate that it happened. I just thought, I was like, ugh, okay, this is where it's starting to get a little slow for me. Like, where's the climax coming here? That's where it was. And then, you know, you have the whole incident with Harry dying, and that kind of is the actual climax, unfortunately. But it just took a little bit to get there for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like hate seven, that it was in there. I just think it was a little drawn out for what it was.
Seven husbands is a lot of husbands. But, you know, if you do like the five husbands, it doesn't have the same ring to it. So
I could get behind six.
Well, the last husband wasn't really a husband. That was just so she
was the best husband.
Yeah, he was so hands off and just so that she could loved get her lover's estate
so much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, he was the most ideal one.
Yeah, he definitely was.
Sure.
And we've been kind of dancing around it, but basically the book answers the question of who was Evelyn's true love, and it turns out it was actress Celia St. James. And so what did you guys think of that twist in the beginning of the book? What did you think of their relationship as two LGBTQ plus women in this time period?
I've never read a representation of bisexuality like this. And I feel like from a non-queer person, it's the best example of what that kind of sexuality can look like. Like it was, I don't know, I feel like it was a very good representation of the struggles of being a bisexual person, especially in that time period, then, and also dealing with, you know, men wanting you to be straight and women wanting you to be completely lesbian and balancing that. And I don't know, I thought it was a really complex and beautiful relationship. So I really enjoyed the fact that Celia was her true love.
I did too. I did not see it coming. I mean, I went into this book pretty blind, so I don't know if you did more research that you'd know that there was an LGBTQ romance in it, but I did not. And so I was like so shocked. And then, yeah, their relationship was so wholesome and loving and genuine. And I really loved that. And it made me sad, but it was like a great plot device in the book that the homophobia basically of the world put so much strain on their relationship. But that was also something that was like really eye-opening to think about as someone who's straight and also not living in that time period.
I was shocked when that first, I was like, oh my goodness. I did not see that coming, because it's taking place in the 50s and the 60s, which that time period, those things were not discussed. And I thought it was really interesting how they went about living their lives after that, and what they did to cover that up, and things that they did later on to protect themselves.
Yeah. Because a lot of the book is just Evelyn's self-preservation throughout her life. And one of the most impactful moments was, for me at least, was the Stonewall riots and their reaction to it, because they were in New York City and they were contemplating going down, because it was Harry and his lover, John, who was married to Celia. And they were all kind of like this cute double couple, double date. But they were considering going down to the Stonewall riots, but they realized that if they did, that would be outing themselves. And then that wouldn't help the situation at all. It would just turn it into this paparazzi fest.
Right.
So they contributed through monetary donations to different organizations. So that broke my heart a bit, but I totally saw what, like, Evelyn's inner monologue was definitely correct in she was so smart about self-preservation and trying to help the movement quietly.
Right. My one critique of Evelyn's character, the one thing I didn't like about her, but that I understood as like being part of her, was that self-preservation, because this is like basically why Celia and her break up, is that Evelyn has spent so much time building like her career that she refuses to have it threatened in any way, and like will burn down every other facet in her life protecting it. And I was like kind of with Celia. I was like, Evelyn, just like take the money and run. Like, you don't have to live this life. Like, you can be happy and just like give this up. But she was not about it.
Yeah, because at that point she had her daughter, she had Celia, she had her New York apartment. She wasn't really doing many movies. Like, she could have just taken the money and run, but that wouldn't be the seven husbands of Evelyn Hugo. That would be the four husbands of Evelyn Hugo, or five husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Right. Well, very happy love story.
And I know I kind of said at the beginning, she doesn't change as a character a whole lot in the book. Like, she's still very ruthless and you like the self-preservation thing. But I guess she does transition a little in the sense that like love becomes more important than fame eventually for her. Like it took her 50 some years to get there, but like eventually she does. It takes Harry dying for her to realize really that like family and time with the people you love is more important to her. I'm not sure she could have got there at any age, but the one she was at, but she does change a little bit in that aspect.
I think also because y'all have grown up in a time period where LGBTQ rights were, I mean, you went to high school with people who were out for either trans or they were gay or lesbian or bi or whatever. That was perfectly fine to state that and be that. And I'm sure some of those kids were bullied, but for the most part, everyone was very accepting about it. When I was growing up, if a boy had an earring, one earring in the wrong ear, oh, he's gay. And that's just his secret signal to let you know that he's gay. And then you were trying to keep track of, well, is the earring in the right ear? Right is wrong, left is right. You know, it was just this whole thing. You just did not discuss it. There were people that I went to high school with who I found out later came out in college earlier that were gay. But in high school, that was never, ever discussed, even amongst their closest friends. So I can kind of understand that desire of Evelyn's, that self-protection at all costs. And she did lose a lot because of that. But at that time period, she would have lost everything. And she might have lost a lot of her money in the process.
Well, she mentioned like they could lose their lives. So
right. So it's a nicer, more pleasant place now.
Thankfully. We're getting better in the society.
Yeah. Slowly but surely.
So the other shocking twist is the connection that she has to Monique. So Harry dies in a car crash, and we find out later it's because he was drunk driving, and the person in the passenger seat was his lover, who also was Monique's father. And Evelyn, to cover up Harry's death, put her father in the driver's seat to make it seem like he was the one who was driving that car.
I think this is why I could never all the way move over to liking Evelyn, is because of how horrible this one scene was. I just, that hurt my heart so bad knowing that they did that.
It was so brutal because it was a drunk driving incident. And so the people who crashed the car are at fault. Like, they got behind the wheel and they drove when they shouldn't have. And so, and my heart really broke for Monique, like having to think that her father was to blame for his own death, which he still got in the car. But, you know, it's so different thinking that your father made us one horrible decision and it was his fault versus him just kind of being a bystander in a bad choice. And I loved that it was in the book, because I think because you get so much of Evelyn's perspective, you can also kind of gloss over some of her like worst choices, but this was like a really poignant way to just really not forgive Evelyn fully.
Yeah.
Right. Like, she loved Harry with her whole heart, but that was despicable.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I really was struggling because I had loved her up until this point, and her logic always seemed sound to me because it was just her fighting a system that was super broken and super sexist. But this situation, because you get Monique's perspective and you get the family's hurt and the pain that she caused covering up, it just made it so hard. And like, you're not supposed to forgive Evelyn. I mean, Evelyn wasn't asking for forgiveness there. She was just trying to undo a wrong that she had done in previously. So I think it's really hard, but it is a great story.
Well, and in undoing the wrong, she outs Monique's father. So it is lose-lose, no matter which way you go. Like, that was heavy.
But it brought her closer to her dad in a way.
Yes, it gave her closure she needed and let her know her dad wasn't, you know, the person who caused the crash. But also she had to rethink everything about her dad because then she found out he was gay.
Right. And then it also challenged then the questions at the end of the book where she's talking to her mother about her dad and saying, did you have a passionate relationship? And her mother was like, well, I wouldn't say passionate, but we loved each other deeply. So then she's faced with the choice of, do I tell my mother this new information, or do I just let it go and keep it to myself? Which I thought that was due to Evelyn's choices, put Monique between a rock and a hard place. Do I tell my mom this new information that I have about my dad? Or because you can't leave part of, you have to tell that whole story to your mother. He was not driving, but the person driving the car was drunk and was his lover. You can't not tell that whole story.
Right. I do like how it kind of explored the idea of, do soulmates have to be someone you're sexually attracted to? And I thought that with her and Harry, and then with Monique's parents, were like really beautiful depictions of relationships. Like, you can only hope to be that happy in a relationship, even if it isn't like a sexual love. It's still just like a true friendship love. And I thought that was a nice way to kind of explore that further than just Celia and Harry.
That's
I agree. I do love how this is kind of what my mom was saying, but I really liked sort of pondering the burden of the truth, because this was a big thing I used to talk about in some of my high school English classes, actually, is telling the truth actually a noble act, or is it shifting the burden from you to the person who doesn't know? And I think that this book is a really good example of that being very unclear about if the truth is a blessing or if the truth is just washing Evelyn of one last guilty bit of guilty conscience.
That's the one Monique interjection storyline that I didn't mind. I thought Monique's divorce was sort of pointless.
Boring.
I was like, okay, Evelyn empowered you to move on, but like, why do I care?
Right. Go ahead, Mom.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Casey.
I was going to say, this is the one part of the book I didn't like, is that I did find Monique pretty boring. And the whole time we were in her perspective and not in Evelyn's life, I was kind of like, all right, can I fast forward? Like, we get it. You're writing the book and we don't know why she chose you. Like, let's skip to the interesting part, which is Evelyn's life. And so I understand why it was there, because the final twist was so epic. Like, that's clearly why Monique's character was there. But I also kind of just wish that it had just been about Evelyn.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the twist and that part of Monique, but I really didn't care about the rest of her stuff.
I'm not disagreeing with you about Monique. She was not.
Oh, feel free to disagree.
She was not a charismatic person. I will give you that. But I thought it was really interesting. She's 35 in this book, which when we found out how old she was, surprised me, because she sounded like a much younger person at the beginning to me, because she was didn't have a lot of confidence. She was in this marriage that was, I expected her to be younger. And so when I found out she was 35, I was like, what? You should be having more confidence in yourself by this age. You should know kind of who you are and where you want to go at this point. And marrying someone just because he's been hanging around for a couple of years, not really a good reason to get married. If you don't feel it, you don't feel it. And that she's at this point in her career where she's still kind of a low-level journalist. She hasn't really moved up the ranks of writing. She does work at this prestigious, fashion magazine, which is, I guess, is a step up. But I thought it was interesting to see that she kind of grew into herself a little bit. And also, I think they bring in the biracial component for her, about how she doesn't really know, she doesn't really belong to either world. And I think that messes with a lot of kids' heads, that it kind of steers them off course and they get lost in that. I don't really know who I am, so I don't really function very well. And I kind of feel like that's where Monique is in this book until she meets Evelyn.
Yeah, I just wish that Carol Jenkins Reid, or what, Taylor Jenkins Reid, would write a different book about that and not put it in this book.
Not put it in this book.
I mean, I agree with your mom more. Like, I really liked it. Like, I liked Monique, maybe because I'm a journalist and I could relate to her.
Well, me too.
I mean, yeah, but I'm like,
trained as a journalist.
Yeah, like, and we'll all be single at 35 too. No,
all getting divorces at 35.
Hopefully, not at that point in our career, though.
Hopefully not. But it just, I think she was complicated because of, like, or, how am I trying to say this? I think she related to Evelyn a lot, and I liked that, like, modern Evelyn without the confidence and, like, feeling like you don't fit in, but, like, Evelyn pushed her way in, where she didn't fit in anywhere because she was a Cuban-American, first-generation American woman, bisexual in the 1940s, but she just let herself into the room. She like was Kool-Aid man styling into rooms. But
they had the same ambitions, but not the same means
execution
to get there.
Right.
So I liked that juxtaposition where it's just like biracial woman in a bad marriage, maybe not abusive, but just like stale and not going very far in her career because she's not pushing her way and asking for it. And like, she needs that confidence boost. So I really liked that component.
I liked that she grew as a person, that all of a sudden she's starting to stand up for herself. She wants, I want this and I want this. And Evelyn, you will do this or I'm leaving. So she kind of grew up and started asking for what she wanted.
She does change the most out of the characters. So she's got that going for her. But
what do you think about the decision she makes at the end when she figures out Evelyn's true plan? What do you think about the decision she makes to let Evelyn go forward with her plan to take her own life before her cancer gets bad?
It's another like very morally gray topic. Like I felt very complex feelings about it because on one hand, I think, you know, your life's not over. Like you don't know how much joy you have left or, you know, it's so sad to think about someone cutting their life short. But I also, you know, don't know what I would do in that position. And I understand not wanting to, you know, have to live the end of your life in a very difficult and you know, not have your health and kind of more of a deterioration. Like I understand that as well. And so I don't know. I liked it because it was complicated, but I'm still like, man, I don't know how I feel.
I think Evelyn lived her life on her own terms. So she was going to end her life on her own terms. And I think because she had lost her daughter when she was young to the same cancer. And she didn't have Celia, she didn't have Harry, she didn't really have anyone except for her assistant. She lacked the loved ones and the family to support her through a really grueling cancer treatment that would only really prolong her life. So while I think it's a very morally gray topic and this is a fiction, work of fiction. And, but in this like specific scenario, I think ultimately Monique's decision was to let Evelyn decide for herself. And it's not your place to really decide for someone in that instance.
Despite being fiction though, you know, there's gotta be people out there who know their loved one is going to in their life for what they might see to be very good reasons, and like the burden of deciding whether you intervene or not, man, I would never want to have to make that decision
for sure.
And
right,
still don't know what I feel about it because that's a heavy thing to have on your conscience. Like you want them to be happy, and if that means, you know, happiness is no longer being there, but also like it is life, and I don't know, that's a lot.
Definitely. And I agree with you, Catherine. She was in her late 70s. She had lived her life the way she wanted to live it. Everyone close to her was already dead. and it would just be prolonging it. She would not ever get to a point. And the cure could have killed her just as easily as the actual disease. I even as a person, I would still struggle with it, but I don't think I would have intervened because she was at a certain age. If it was someone in their 40s or 50s, I would have been right back at that door going, you can't give up yet. You're too young. But when you're in your late 70s, 80s, you've done your job in life. You are allowed to let go.
Yeah, right. I think my like perspective was I was just sad to know that Evelyn was going to die.
And alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Grace left. That made me sad.
Yeah. Especially for someone who did have so much love in their life. I was very sad that was the ending, but I also found it so bittersweet and complicated that I loved it as an ending, but I was just like, it really hurt your heart.
Yeah, all I know is that I never want to be in that situation in real life.
Oh, amen. Yeah.
Well, and I think Evelyn, even though it's hard that she did it alone, there are too many questions if people were around.
Right. That
the police would have intervened. There would have been questions. There would have been an inquiry. There would have been an investigation. And so I think that's why Evelyn set it up that way. She told her whole story. She sent her assistant on a vacation. So she was completely alone. So there was no mystery there as to what happened. Right. No one forced her to do it. No one tried to kill her for the money.
She was old and mixed up her pills or whatever.
Right, right, right.
Well, I have one last question, but I don't know. I think we've kind of discussed it. It's, do you think Evelyn was a reliable narrator? I don't know if y'all want to discuss that one.
Oh, yes, she was, because she was brutally honest, unapologetically honest. I think she was not lying about anything, even though she's kind of a chaotic person. Like, everything she said, I was like, yep, that was probably, yep.
See, I disagree, Caitlin. I think she told you what she wanted you to know. She didn't apologize for her behavior, but I'm sure there were stories that she opted not to tell because they might have painted her in a light that she didn't want to be painted in.
Worse than replacing the driver of a drunk driving crash?
Yes. Well, maybe to her. Maybe to her.
Okay.
Because she paint herself in kind of a dark light, and that sounds kind of like what she wanted you to believe, that she was not a good person. And so she gave you all of those things. I think that anybody who's giving an autobiography or a memoir is always leaving something out.
I kind of come down in between you guys. I thought for the most part, you know, she was very brutally honest. But I think she even admits that the only things she was going to be leaving out were things that were really other people's stories to tell. And so, especially with Celia, I can see Evelyn being unreliable about stories that would paint Celia in a bad light.
And Harry, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you can omit things. So that's where she can become unreliable for sure. And she was brutally honest, but because we had her logic throughout, it was all very like calculated and all very like, okay, we can make sense of that. But I don't mm-hmm. know if you had made it a narrator that was more third person, you would see a different side. You would think of Evelyn differently, but that's the beauty of this book is mm-hmm. that she's not supposed to be this like reliable saint. It's that she's has right. her demons. So I think she is both is and isn't a reliable narrator.
Agree.
Well, I think there you have it. What are you guys thinking for suggestions based off this book? Because I'm going to say Malibu Rising before Caitlin can say it.
I wasn't going to say it.
Really?
Actually, you'll appreciate this one. I was going to say The Great Gatsby.
That's a good one.
Ooh. Okay. My book is The Book of Cold Cases by Simone St. James.
I've heard that is excellent.
It is really good. It is about a journalist who, she's a on the side journalist, and she looks into cold cases, and it has that glamour, that Hollywood glamour. And Caitlin, you would like this because you like suspense and that kind of book. There's a lot of that in this book. So
Lily,
I think
is our
really
number
like
one fan. She knows.
But it has that Hollywood glamour side. It also has a tiny bit of romance in it, which that's why I read books, is for romance. And it has a journalist who's interviewing a person and finding out all of these facts about their life, trying to solve two murders. So it's good.
All right.
A little Mexican gothic as well in there. Gothic-ishness.
Okay. My recommendation, I don't think I recommended this one before, but I might have. It's nonfiction, but it's written in narratives. And it's written by a journalist who spent, I think, a decade interviewing three women at like over the course of their lives. And so the book is called Three Women. It's by Lisa Tadeo. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it. But it is basically about these women's private lives, and they're all sort of have these complicated relationships. And so it's a lot of about romance and patriarchy and sexual relationships. So it kind of has the same nonfiction vibe and like thematic tones as Evelyn Hugo, but it's like actually nonfiction.
That's interesting. I'll put those on my TBR.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure The Book of Cold Cases is already on my TBR.
Of course it is. Okay, well, we just want to emphasize that these are just our opinions, and it doesn't have to be yours. So feel free to disagree, and you can disagree with us all over social media. We're at Busy Girls Pod, or our Goodreads group is Busy Girls Book Club Podcast, or you could just email us at Busy Girls Pod with hate mail or suggestions. We'll accept it all. And also rate and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, because that's how we get boosted in the algorithm.
Let us know a good book where we can bring Mama Murray back.
Ooh, I would love to come back. love it.
Submit all your romance recommendations.
Oh, that's a very long list.
I think next week is Love Hypothesis.
That was a good one.
It's a good one.
You know, she's actually a scientist.
Yes.
I did know that.
The woman who wrote that is actually a scientist. I was like, oh, okay, so we know what we're talking about here.
Yes. Maybe we'll just let Casey go do her stuff later and you can stay and we'll do it.
Wow. Yeah.
You've been replaced. Sorry, we found a better name.
Yeah. Exactly.
Tough, but I accept it.
Well, like you heard, we have a few episodes lined up. And so we post our TBRs on our Instagram, so you can follow along, join us. So yeah, I think that's really it. We want to thank Fiona Marie for joining us. We appreciate our number one fan making an appearance on the podcast. So thank you so much for supporting us.
You are welcome. I brag about you whenever I get the chance.
Oh. We know. We've seen you all over our Instagram.
Yeah. Come on. My mom, Catherine's mom, step it up.
I know. My mom's reading along with us, but a silent fan.
I've even posted in the comment sections of some TikToks.
Yes. I'm a little behind. Sorry.
I was like, Busy Girl Podcast has a review on this book if you want to learn more.
I love it.
Well, we appreciate it. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Fiona.
Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.